Hello, Chelsea fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Lad from Matthew Harden podcast. I'm your host, Shane Holcomb. Another international break has passed as the Blues prepare to take the trip westward to Leicester to face the Fox at King Power Stadium Saturday lunchtime. I'm super excited to welcome back onto the podcast two of Chelsea's biggest supporters and craftiest media personalities from the land down under in Australia, Miz and RJ. Guys, great to be talking to you once again. I'll start with you, Miz. How's everything going, man?
Yeah, going good, man. Love coming on your show. I think this is probably my third time here. And it's always a laid back conversation. So I always really enjoy it. And it's been all right. I know it's been international break, but there's been some interesting stuff that's been happening. I don't know if RJ's seen this. I've just seen some crazy stuff on Twitter in regards to some of the matters that's just been exposed by Romain Molinar. I've just come across this and it's crazy. So it's always interesting stuff going around, Shane.
Yeah, well, once again, man, it's great to see your face. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. RJ, it's great to welcome you back once again. I think we last spoke the summer with both you guys on a roundtable. So of course, I've addressed the listeners before and the fact that school, especially during the fall, has been very busy for me. So I really value the time that I get to talk with you guys, especially the two great guests we have today. And RJ, it's once again great to see your face. You've been doing some great work recently, and welcome back to the pod, man. How's everything going?
First of all, pleasure to be making is the second or third appearance. I'm closely shadowed with my fellow Aussie brother Miz here. So either way, it's always a good sign when you're asked to come back on a show, I find. So big tick for that. So good on you, Shane. Mm. And congratulations on all the great stuff you're doing in school and, you know, progressing your career. I think Miz and I could agree that it'd be nice to go back to school, Miz, and do things a little bit differently, but we move, we talk Chelsea, and yeah, it's just great to be able to have a great conversation with the both of you. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, well, once again, guys, thank you so much for joining me. And Miz, you mentioned how nice international break has been just to get some rest, especially for Chelsea and the likes of Timo Werner, Romelu Lukaku, Mateo Kovacic, Marcus Alonso, Chris Pulisic. I can go on and on because we've had injury trouble over the past couple weeks, guys.
Yeah,
it looks like Timo Werner is back in training, which is a good sign for the weekend. Lukaku, Kovacic, Pulisic even. Probably still doubts for Saturday's match. So in general, though, the international break helped Chelsea in this regard, moving into the second quarter of the Premier League season. So, RJ, I'll start with you on this one. How much are you looking forward to getting the likes of Werner, especially Lukaku, and even a guy like Kovacic, who's been one of our best players this season, back in training? It's great to see them even back playing with the guys, getting active, but also what are your thoughts on them getting back into match form? Because we've got a big one, especially against Juventus next Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge, huge month coming up. I've just finished writing a monthly key piece themes article for Talk Chelsea. And the thing that it struck me was how good we did without the players you've just mentioned. And then you've got some other players that were missing throughout the month periodically. So you had Mason Mount to illness, Kante with his COVID, Andreas Christensen with his teeth, the like. We have a lot of players that have been out in recent times, but those three you mentioned, Werner, Lukaku, and Kovacic, who for me, he's already placing himself firmly in the conversation as potentially a player of the season for us just because of how influential he's been. So having them back in now, knowing we're about to enter a 12-game run from here through to the end of the calendar year is absolutely huge for us. Also connected to that, not only are they extra bodies that are going to help us be able to manage the risk of fatigue and just general injury prevention, but at the heart of it, they're absolutely quality players who bring different yet very equally important contributions to our team. So Big Rom, we know what he does, focal point of our attack. Timo Werner, he's the space creator. And Kovacic is already on five goal assists and already a couple of goals to his name. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see how they get integrated back into our squad, Shane.
And, Miz, I want to go off of what RJ was just saying. I really want to focus in on Mateo Kovacic this season because we've seen him kind of come out of his comfort zone and advancing forward and playing balls into the strikers and out wide and even getting goals this season, you know, looking on that front foot, something we haven't really seen in his first three seasons with Chelsea before this season. So how delighted I've been with Mateo Kovacic so far this season. We've missed him in some games, but it's great to have him back, especially hopefully we'll see him against Juventus next Tuesday. There hasn't been too much talk actually about his status right now, but it's great to see a guy like Kovacic this back in training, hopefully the next couple of days. But how impressed have you been with a guy like this? Because he's really stepped up in the past 6 months.
Yeah, man, very, very impressive. I'm not really sure if I've seen him in the training grounds recently. So I'm not sure, because I've seen the pictures of Timo Werner, Lukaku, Mason Mount. So those boys are back in training and whatnot, but I don't know if I've seen Kovacic. So Kovacic could still be out. I don't think he's definitely not going to make the Leicester game. I'm not really sure if he's going to make the Juventus game either. So we need to wait till what Thomas Tuchel has to say about this in the press conference later today. But in regards to his impact and the style of football, I've got to say, I think he was always progressive. Even last season, there was a lot of, you know, progressive passes that didn't materialize into an assist because we didn't have a finisher. I think this is where people need to sort of recall that if you look at last season, plenty of passes that went forward and some really, really juicy passes, and our attacking players just couldn't finish things off. Whereas this season, it's more noticeable because you've got Lukaku who's been able to finish some of those really good assists that Kovacic has provided. But also on top of that, yes, I think he is producing far more progressive balls because there is someone like Romelu Lukaku up front, whereas last season we didn't have a monster up front. So he probably just felt that, well, what's the point, Jermaine? What's the point? Let me just see if I can try and manufacture something myself. So look, the player that he's, you know, that we're seeing now, I'm not surprised because he always had that. I don't think he's turned into a different player. I think it's more noticeable, as I said, because of all the factors that I've said. But yes, you know, he's I think there is an element of where Tuchel probably said to him that be a little bit more aggressive. So that's probably what we're seeing from Kovacic, which is fantastic. And I hope he continues like this for the rest of the season whenever he comes back.
And luckily, too, Ruben Loftus-Cheek has stepped up in his absence, especially over these past couple weeks. He's been a great storyline for Chelsea fans to ponder over. And it's great to be watching Loftus-Cheek excel the past couple of weeks, especially after a pretty grim future going into the summer. I think he stepped into that Kovacic role really nicely. People were questioning if he could play in that pivot, including myself, and he's really proved us wrong. And RJ, I want to transition over to the Champions League right now, because I don't think Chelsea fans have been talking too much about the group stage. I think it's something we need to highlight maybe a little bit more. Now, I talked a little bit about this with Joe Tweedy and Daniel Childs on my last episode, and the fact that we aren't as scared anymore, even if we do finish second place in the group and have to go on the road in the second leg to any team. We feel like we can beat any team in Europe at the moment, RJ. But transitioning to you, I know you follow the Serie A pretty closely. Against a team like Juventus, who hasn't had the greatest league campaign thus far, but they've been 4 wins out of 4 in the Champions League. We're still 3 points behind them. We're playing them next Tuesday at the Bridge. They hold a +2 goal differential against us as well. So it's going to be a challenge for Chelsea to finish top of Group H. RJ, what do you think the keys are going forward, though, against a team like Juventus? And can you talk a little bit about more their wonky form between the Serie A and the Champions League, what's going on really with them?
Yeah, no, very good points made about if you cast your mind back to the first game versus Juventus, they did a very good job in really keeping Big Rom quiet. I thought the experience of Chiellini and Bonucci was really crucial for us because we were playing the hot hand, as I know we like to say in the poker world. But Lukaku at the time, because he wasn't able to really produced the same level of quality he was in the previous few games. I think for us, we were in that phase, we were trying to still figure out how to best utilize him. But Juventus just really produced a classic European tie where they really leveraged off their experience, they really slowed things down and really frustrated us. And the goal itself, you'll recall, happened right after halftime with a brilliantly taken solo finish from Federico Chiesa, who's been arguably the best Italian player over the last 6 months at least. So for me, it was one of those smash and grabs that Juventus, it was built on the back of really good defence, which is what they're notoriously very good at, especially under Allegri, who's a more pragmatic style of manager. But in the Serie A, you'll see their position, they're lingering around the mid-table mark, although it's only early days still. Part of that's attributed to just how good the rest of the competition has really bridged the gap. So you've got both the Milan teams, I'm obviously an Inter supporter, Lazio, Napoli, Tammy Abraham, what he's doing at Roma at the moment. There's just a whole bunch of increasing quality in the front end of town in the Serie A. So again, it's very early to start talking like Juventus are a team that's falling off the wayside. But for this game coming up at Stamford Bridge, it's absolutely crucial for us that we actually play with purposeful possession and not just go side to side, because that'll just play right into their hands. They know pound for pound, player for player, we've got the muscle over them, but they know equally they've also got some potent players on the counter and can really hurt us. So for us, it'll really be about stretching them, pulling players out of position, and really just being aggressive with our first and second ball wins and just causing them to feel very uncomfortable. Because the moment that they set into a bit of a rhythm and allow their experience to dictate the ebb and flow of the game, it'll cause us to be frustrated. So I think a fast start is really important for us to really, yeah, cause them to be disrupted. I don't know what you boys think.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to see them at eighth in the Serie A table right now, especially for you witnessing Juventus's domination over the Serie A as an Inter supporter, I'm sure, RJ, over the past couple of years. But now, you know, it seems like the Serie A is inching closer and towards the competition, the Premier League, where every single match day is not given to Juventus. And I think too, when Allegri came back and signed that contract, the first thing that was going to be on it was to focus and prioritize the Champions League. And I think you've seen that so far this season. I want to transition over to this question over to you now, Miz, because it's probably arguably our biggest game of the season. I know that's kind of crazy to say, but you know, when you defend the Champions League, I know last season was an outlier. Of course, we drew the toughest team even after finishing the top of the group in Atletico Madrid. But typically, you know, when you finish top of the group, you have an advantage going into the round of 16. I'm confident to say that I don't really matter either way. But of course, as a confidence booster, you want to win this game at home against the Juventus side in such a huge tide. The world will be watching. So what are your thoughts on this Chelsea team? You know, we're going to have maybe the likes of Timo Werner back for this one. We'll see about Romelu Lukaku. But we saw how Juventus were able to bottle us up and kind of, what's the word, annoy us, I think, over at the Allianz Stadium last month. And that started, pretty sure we went to them and then we lost to City. So that was one of our low points in the season, Miz. But we bounced back. I think that's the most important thing so far. We've seen Chelsea bounce back from adversity. So looking forward to the rest of the Champions League. Realistically, do you think this team has what it takes, you know, to go to an Atletico Madrid or go to a PSG in the round of 16 and get a tie-out win?
Yeah, 100%. I like actually playing these sort of teams because they tend to want to play football, and that makes it an open sort of style of play, which then kind of benefits us because we are fairly decent in counter-attack. So we can play both style of football. If we want to play possession base and there's an opponent that wants to come at us, that's perfect for us as well, because we want to be able to beat their press, play around them, play through them, and then, you know, try and create goal scoring opportunities. If they are very aggressive, they want to hold the ball, we are very comfortable without the ball because our work rate's very good and we can counter. And it's perfect. We're not one of those teams that just want to sit back. The only time I've seen that under Tuchel is the recent Man City game where they absolutely boxed the scene, which I felt suffocated watching that. So, but that's a very, very, that's an anomaly. That does not happen on a regular basis. It definitely does not happen under Thomas Tuchel. So in regards to answering your question about, you know, possibly meeting someone like Atletico Madrid, PSG, I'm not worried. I'm actually not worried. I actually get worried about teams that are going to sit deep. That's what worries me, because I don't think we move the ball around quickly. This is why we got caught out the last time against Juventus, because Juventus, Italians, they know how to defend. They are very good at defending. This is their art. You know, when it comes to football, they're supremely well organized when it comes to defense. I mean, RJ is smiling. He knows. And the thing, what annoyed me against Juventus the first time, is not only Juventus were not in a good form, and they're still not in a good form, to be honest, it's the fact that they knew what they had to do to frustrate us. They knew that this is not a City team. This is not a, you know, classic Barcelona team of Pep days back in, you know, 2013, 2012, early sort of 2010s. They knew that this particular Chelsea team don't move the ball around quick enough, and there's not enough movement all the time to frustrate us and pull us out. So this is what I want to see when we play Juventus next up, because I think it'll be the same thing again. Even though some of their stars will be back, Dybala will be back. Obviously, they still have Chiesa, who's a monster these days. They'll have Morata, who on his day could do a bit of a damage. Let's be honest. I mean, overall, I don't think too much of him, but you just don't know with Morata. He could just click on a particular day. And against Chelsea, you know, there's history. So there's that added touch. I want us to see if we can move the ball quickly, move their defense around, because their defense is quite old. Let's be honest, it's not a young defense. We've got some of our quicker players in and around those areas, and try and move them out of position to create space behind them, then we can trouble them. But if we are static like the way we were last time and expecting, you know, Lukaku to somehow wriggle past Chiellini and Bonucci, they're just too smart. I don't care how good Lukaku is. If there is no movement and you're static and the ball movement is slow, you will not be able to beat them. So, and they are very, very smart on the counter. That's the thing. So you will not be able to beat them defensively, because they'll hold it nice and organized, and they'll counter you and they'll catch you out. They've got enough good players. Now you can say our defense is quite strong too, which is true, but it only takes one. It only takes one mistake and they can put one away. And when you got players like Chiesa up front with Dybala as well, they just need one good chance and it will be in the back of the net. So let's see what happens against Juventus. That will be a very big test. Obviously, before that, it's Leicester. But I'm hoping we should be able to beat Leicester. But Juventus is one where I want to see where our team is this season. I really do.
And RJ, I want to transition into our next talking point, and it kind of rides off of the players who need to step up in games like this. And I love that Miz highlighted, you know, moving the ball and progressive passes, and which is something that Loftus-Cheek and even a guy like N'Golo Kante and Mateo Kovacic, why they're so important to our team. I think we saw someone like Jorginho struggle in his home country last time we played the Italian Giants. But I'm going to transition into surprises and disappointments, not just for Chelsea, but also some other European and Premier League clubs, because I know you guys follow some other leagues, but also some other teams in Premier League closely, because not only do you talk Chelsea on your YouTube channels, but also you, of course, converse with other fans from Premier League clubs, but also you watch a lot of European soccer as well. So, Arjun, I'll turn this over to you. Maybe start with the biggest disappointments for not only maybe Chelsea, but I want to really highlight some other European clubs or maybe some Premier League clubs. What surprised you the most, and what kind of clubs have been disappointing for you to your eye, especially maybe they had a lot of hype going into the season and they haven't kind of panned out so far?
Yeah, that's a good point. So we do talk a lot of Premier League on our show each week, and even with Miz on Down Under Football Crew. I suppose the disappointments up front for me are teams like at the moment who we're versing this weekend, Leicester, who I've been talking up a long time under Brendan Rodgers. And, you know, I'm touching wood here because I'm not expecting us to go out and belt them, but we definitely don't want them to play to their potential, because we know on their day they are a very formidable team who can be in and around the top four. So first up, they've been very disappointing for me so far. But even teams like, and I'm not saying that they're on the same scale as the top end of town, but even like your Leeds at the moment, because all the talk of them was how they play a very fast-paced brand of football and they're like an apron. They're very open. They're very open in attack, but they've got nothing at the back. Like, they're just a team now that have failed to strike twice in terms of being able to play that attacking style of football that derives a lot of benefits. So to me, they've been struggling a lot. I'm expecting a little bit more from them, along with Everton, I've got to say, in the Premier League, a team that's dwindling around the mid-table. And I know that there's a lot of competition in front of them, but they've just been very stale at the moment. So I'm quite having a watchful eye on what Benitez does, and that could be a bit of a watch this space. Obviously, we've highlighted the shortcomings of Juventus at the moment, but again, that's because of how good the competition. I know, I'm not sure how many of your listeners do follow Serie A, but I would strongly encourage you to check it out because it's such an entertaining brand of football at the moment. And the teams that I rattled off before, Lazio, Napoli, the Milan Twins, the Romas of the world, Sassuolos, they're very good teams and I highly recommend you check them out. But even in the La Liga as well, we've all seen the well-documented financial problems at Barcelona. They've been struggling big time. No surprises there. I suppose the degree of the decline is probably just the real surprise for me. But then you've got the likes of teams like Villarreal who are performing really strongly. And we're seeing that in Europe as well for the most part. And yeah, pretty much no other changes that I'm really super surprised with across the board. But yeah, I'm sure Miz probably has a couple of nuggets he wants to share.
I know, Miz, you interviewed one of, honestly, the brightest, I think, media people that I've seen out there on the Twitterverse recently. And Leah's on a couple of days ago, and he's a pretty big Manchester United supporter. So I don't know if you can talk a little bit more about of a perspective from a Man United fan, because I know they're going through a lot of turmoil right now. It seems like every day there's a new story. You talked about Leicester, RJ, and Brendan Rodgers. I don't know if they can really be 100% focused on this weekend, and that might benefit Chelsea because there's just been so much talk about him to United. And I know you've talked to supporters recently, Miss. So what are they kind of saying about not only the job that Ole has done, but the team as a whole, because they just don't see themselves because there's just so much potential in that squad, isn't there, too?
It's quite interesting that you brought up the whole Brendan Rodgers link. I was actually going to, I'm going to be dropping a video in about probably 4 hours from now, which will be the part one of the preview for the Leicester game. And I'll be covering like the Leicester side of the story. And then obviously after Thomas Tuchel does his press conference, I'll cover the Chelsea side of the preview. And it's quite interesting, even though Brendan Rodgers came out flying yesterday, I believe, when some of the reporters said, hey, what about the Man United job? What do you make of all those news that's flying around? And Brendan Rodgers pretty much said to the guy that this is quite disrespectful to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's still at the club. I mean, you can't be asking these sort of questions. And plus, that question is invalid. It's not true. Let's be honest, Brendan Rodgers. You know it's true. Don't you dare tell us that it's not true. We know there's where there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire. And I'd be very surprised if Man United approached Brendan Rodgers and he'd say no to that job. I'd be so, so surprised. And obviously the money will be lucrative. The team is fun, like individually speaking, as you said, Shane, they've got such great talent. As a team, they're probably not clicking at the moment, which is, down to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But Brendan Rodgers will be looking at that team and be like, wow, Sancho, Cristiano, Bruno Fernandes, Pogba, my days, like get me there straight away.
Van de Beek.
Yeah, Van de Beek as well, although I think...
And all those players you just mentioned aren't playing right now.
And they're not playing. Sancho, I don't even, sometimes I have to pinch myself to say, oh, is he actually in the Premier League? So look, Brendan Rodgers, as much as he's, navigating away, negating these sort of questions, let's be honest, Brendan. I think there's been some Man United hierarchy or the board that probably approached you and you may not want to do this now. Maybe you want to do it in the summer, but in the summer, maybe it might not be available. So you got to do what you need to do to progress your sort of future, but we'll see what happens there. But it's an absolute madness. When I spoke to Leas, and obviously RJ was in a part of that show as well, when Leas came to Down Under Football Crew, Man United fans, they're baffled at this stage. Some are actually quite accepting of the whole situation now because it won't change. For them, it feels like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is such a yes man. It probably won't change. They'll probably reassess it at the end of the season. They'll see where what the situation is. If they've missed out on top four, well, then he probably might get the sack. The issue here, Shane, is that they've actually given him a contract not that long ago, a contract extension. So how could you have given this man a contract extension probably about a month, 2 months ago, and now you're, getting really pressurized by the fans to sack him. They're just in such a bad position, the board, that they're going to be made to look like idiots. I mean, they're already looking like idiots, let's be honest, but they're going to be even made to look worse. So I don't know. Well, he's not going at the moment. Let's, you know, he's preparing for Watford. I think Man United's got Watford next up. So he's on leaving. If he gets a win there, who knows? Maybe he'll get another chance. I think after that, they've got us. And I don't know. Maybe we're the ones who are going to
see him his last game.
If Thomas Tuchel and the Chelsea team are able to get that victory against Man United, maybe we are the ones to finally put the nail on the coffin. So we'll see what happens. But I do want him to stick around until then, because I want them to play back. But you never know. Man United always seems to sort of step up against us, but everyone slapped them this season in terms of the big teams, you know, your Liverpools and your City. And if we're in the title chase, which we are, we need to equally slap them as well. So, look, they're in shambles. Their football is pathetic. I've watched a couple of their matches. And the match against City, I've not seen a one-sided game like that in ages. Like, I'm talking about top-flight football, two top teams. City, yes, they boxed us, but I think that had to do with some of our tactical inability in that particular game. We did not connect well from defense to midfield to offense. Whereas City absolutely toyed with Man United. Man United could not get the ball. Literally could not get the ball. Pep Guardiola did not even make a substitution for 90 minutes. He was just having fun. He just told the boys, just pass it around. Just do whatever you want to do. These guys are rubbish. So, yeah, man, it's quite embarrassing to see where Man United's at, but I couldn't care less, to be honest. So hope it continues like that. But look, sooner or later, they will change the manager, and I don't necessarily think they will just click from day one. It will take a bit of time to sort of, you know, even if it's, say, Brendan Rodgers, it will take a bit of time for Brendan Rodgers to gel everyone together. So we'll see what happens.
Mm. The one ironic quote I found in Rodgers' press conference today was the fact that he called Ole a very nice guy, and that it was very disrespectful to a very nice manager and a nice guy to be talking about the job that is already filled. So I thought that was a pretty funny quote.
I love how managers do that. They don't mean it one bit.
Oh my goodness! And I mean, it's hard to say that it won't negatively affect Leicester, especially. They already have their problems right now. They're not doing so great this season. But I want to move on to one Edouard Mendy and his appointments to the team, kind of setting off a new topic and point, because we're going to have to lose him for about 3 or 4 weeks in February and January. Kepa's come out recently. I think he's spoken a lot to the media. We've seen how he stepped up this season when he's been relied on. But I want to talk about Mendy's importance to this team, because so far this season we've kept the most clean sheets. But also this duoship and this friendship that's been building between Mendy and Kepa. I think it's been a very cool thing to see. So transitioning into Kepa's point of view, guys, because he's going to have to play some pretty big games. I'm thinking including that Liverpool game near New Year's Day, because I think Mendy will be leaving somewhat soon to that date. I'm not sure the exact time frame, but Kepa's going to have to step up, especially in the Premier League, in competitions like the FA Cup, the Carabao Cup semifinals, if we get to that stage. So, RJ, I'll start with you on this one. Another player who's really surprised us this season, but in a good way, right, is Kepa Arrizabalaga. Stepped up in penalty shootouts, but also that away 3-0 victory against Tottenham, pretty memorable day. So it's just been great to see him have great mentality, I think, recently. He's proven himself when he has needed to step up, and I think that's given us a little bit more hope going into the AFCON come January and February.
Yeah, for sure. I think the one thing that probably, among many things, that probably doesn't get spoken about enough, Shane, is just how Tuchel has managed to harmonise a very deep and wide squad. And one of the players in a position that's been a bit of a hotspot is our goalkeeping situation. And when you compare what Kepa's form was like pre-Tuchel and even in patches before that during the Lampard era, he's come on leaps and bounds. Now, we know the messaging continues to be, we're all happy for Kepa, we're all behind him, but he knows his role in the team. And at the moment, however long that is, Mendy is the undisputed number one. But because he's been open and transparent about that, and he's not lying to him, everybody's on board that, you know, the strength is in the collective, meaning if we all have a role to play and we can all bask in the glory that comes with it, i.e. all the trophies we will continue to win, including the Champions League. So for Kepa, he's already pulled in a couple of strong performances for us. And obviously the shootouts, the Tottenham performance, but even the saves he made in the last Carabao Cup. For me, what it shows is that he's someone that has improved his confidence levels. He looks physically a lot stronger. He looks more confident, because that was a bit of a talking point, was the lack of confidence his body language seems to espouse when he's on the field, even though confidence is an intangible quality we can't comment on. But he seems to be a lot more assertive with his communication with his defenders. He collects the balls a lot easily now. So overall, we're seeing a lot more confident Kepa. So when we come around to AFCON time, I have a lot more confidence now that he's someone that's going to do a job for us. So credit to him, credit to Tuchel and everybody in the changing room that's helping him find his confidence again.
I think it's a great point that you just made, RJ, and the fact that his confidence when he's being played in these cup shootouts and he has to save a penalty or two, he stepped up to the plate time and time again. And it's been really impressive to see, because it's very hard for probably for him, you know, internally. I guess it was very hard, and it probably still is, you know, to be the number two keeper and to know that that's in, you know, writing and in pen and paper. But the fact that he's still training 100%, he's getting compliments from the likes of Czech, and he's building a friendship with Mendy, I think it's something that we really need to highlight more of. And especially because before the season, we were thinking of shipping him out even in this upcoming January market. And that's what I want to transition to now, because there could be a little bit of reshuffling in this Chelsea squad. I know you do a lot of episodes and a lot of streams about transfer news and other things among the Chelsea team, and a lot of reports recently. Now, honestly, I've seen some of them, but I don't think it's in my place to talk a lot about them because I haven't been able to dive into them too recently with school. But that's why I'm transitioning this topic over to you, Miz. What have been some of the most interesting stories you've seen, especially going to this January transfer market? We're going to get into contract situations a little bit later in the episode, so we'll save that for later. But players in the Chelsea squad right now that have a little bit of gravy and a little bit of clouds over their future come January.
Yeah, man. You know, one of the most sort of decorated story that's gone around is obviously the Rudiger story. His contract extension seems to be up in limbo, and to the point where I'm sort of convinced now I don't think he'll stick around. And I think that's why we're linked with so many different centre-backs at the moment. Recently, we've been linked with Atea Azalai from Hungary. And there's some, you know, apparently there's some strong links with him. And obviously, in the last 24 hours, was Fofana from Leicester. And prior to that, there was always links with Nicolas Sule. There was links with, well, there's still links with Jules Koundé. So this is one particular position where we probably will expect something to happen in the summer. I don't think it'll materialize in the January window, but in the summer something could happen. And once it gets closer to January, we'll more or less figure out whether Rudiger will completely stay or not, because he can potentially get into you know, doing like a pre-contract with whoever he wants to next go to. So we'll either figure out that he stays or he's already got a contract with someone else. We'll figure that out. The other position that gets talked about a lot is obviously in midfield. You know, your Declan Rice rumors just doesn't seem to go away. With the likes of N'Golo Kante, who we are managing his time now, there's question marks whether how long is he going to be able to play for Chelsea. You know, we play 2-3 matches at times per week, especially when it comes to the December sort of side. That position is quite interesting. Jorginho's agent, every international break, comes out and says that Jorginho's got the dream to go back one day. And that's fine. I've actually got no issues with that, because it makes sense. Jorginho likes to play for Italy. He likes the Italian league. And he's got history there. So I've got no issues that one day he would want to go back and you know, play over there and rule over there. I've got no issues. So I don't know whether he'll be one of those Chelsea players I'll have 10 years under Chelsea, you know, in their resume. So that's another player that could be in the next couple of seasons. I'm not saying maybe this season or next season, but maybe season 23, 24, there may not be any Jorginho around. So we need to think about that. So there's the midfield situation, Declan Rice, Tchouaméni just doesn't seem to go away as well. We've got the rise of Conor Gallagher on loan. So there's that topic. Billy Gilmore, what's happening with him? We'll see under Dean Smith in Norwich now. And obviously the rise of Ruben Loftus-Cheek. So the midfield conversation will heat up as the days go along. And then, of course, up front, we are simply not clicking up front. And Hakim Ziyech, there's rumours about him possibly leaving. It could even be January. There's rumours that he could possibly go on a loan to Dortmund, possibly on a loan to Barcelona. And then there's also counter rumours that now he's not going to go and he's, you know, possibly will assess it at the end of the season. But there's always clouds around Christian Pulisic and his, you know, injury issues and whatnot. How long can Chelsea prolong that? One more injury, what does that mean for Christian Pulisic? I hope he doesn't get injured. There's obviously the rise of Calum Hudson-Odoi. Are we going to see more minutes for him now that everyone's fit and will be coming back? Kai Havertz, bit on and off with his form. Timo Werner, bit of on and off as well. You know, it's always inconsistent. So up front, there's some serious concerns. So that's why we're seeing rumours like Luis Diaz in recent times from Porto coming out. And you know, his agent actually said it's normal. You know, my player has been playing well and it's very normal. The likes of Chelsea and Liverpool are linked with my player. So, yeah, look out for these three positions. Could be an attacker. There could be a midfielder. There could potentially be a centre-back. Obviously, Levi Colwell as well, another Chelsea graduate who's looking good. So lots happening, my man. I can't wait, actually, for the summer window. It's going to be buzzing.
And Miz, I want to give a quick shout out. I don't know if my listeners were able to turn in. I think it was to you, Matisse, in Eunice's video a couple of days ago. And you made absolutely, not only was it brilliant, but it was very comical analogy to the Tony Rudiger contract situation.
That analogy has gone viral.
Oh, I'll let you explain that at a later date, but I mean, I just want to give a quick shout out to you because I think that was a great piece of content. And you mentioned Pulisic and Calum Hudson-Odoi, and RJ, I think we're starting to see a little bit of a dilemma between these two players. And I think while myself would love to see both of them play, you know, it's just not realistic going into the future. I think while we can still have both of them in the squad, these are two players who are earning upwards of 100k a week, and they're going to be starting games no matter what the situation is. So Pulisic's back, definitely. I'm not going to hide it, you know, he's my favorite Chelsea player. For those reasons of being an American, and he's come back, he scored for his country in a massive game against Mexico. Off the bat, he's got confidence right now. He's back from an injury. It's crazy. He hasn't really played for Chelsea. He hasn't started, I think, since that Crystal Palace game on the opening day of the season where he scored a goal. So like Miss said, it's been disappointing to see, you know, every time it seems like he gets momentum, he gets time out, but now he's back. But Calum Hudson-Odoi is also playing really well right now, Miz. I'm RJ, and I think there's going to be a little bit of a dilemma on that left-wing spot where they both favor to play. So how are you looking forward to, and are you really interested to see how the situation plays out? Because the situation, the reality is, you know, 200K players, they don't want to be sitting on the bench. They've got a lot of talent, especially Pulisic. You know, there's been a lot more rumors on his side, you know, potentially leaving the club because he's such a big figure for United States sports. And, you know, he's got to be starting week in and week out in the Champions League. I mean, wherever he ends up going, maybe down the line in his future. But hopefully that is his Chelsea. I think he really wants to cement his place in this team. But maybe that's not from the start. And I think that while he has proved that's a great threat off the bench, that's not what he wants. Trust me, it's not what he wants. But these are two very talented players. Ardis, what are your takes on this position dilemma? Because the reality is both of them can't really play at the same time, but they're both very talented players. They're both contributing to our team really well.
Yeah, I suppose a couple of ways to look at it. So from a player's point of view, I can understand why it could be a dilemma. But from the club's point of view, I could see it as an opportunity. And what I mean by that is that you've got two players that that are going to be hungry and competing each other and thus elevating themselves to get one over the other in the most friendliest form possible. But the reality is, we know mentally speaking, Pulisic is going to want to start and he's going to want to play as much as possible. Physically speaking, I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there, and he's going to really need to sharpen up and focus on getting himself right properly. And that might mean for the foreseeable future, his role is best served as an impact player and have his minutes managed just to protect his interest as well as the club's interest, because at the heart of it, he's still a very young player. He's not at the peak of his powers, but if he doesn't manage his physical condition, he can very fast become a player that could have been rather than will be. So if I was Christian, which obviously I'm not, it would all be about accepting the situation for what it is. It's about a gradual reintegration back into the squad, making the minutes count, not overplaying your hand. And conversely, it allows him to get over his physical demons. It allows also the club, Tuchel, and his partner now, Callum Hudson-Odoi, to work together. Again, this comes back to the culture. If we all win, then we all benefit. So on one hand, yes, he's going to want to play as much as possible, but because he physically can't at the moment, take your time, integrate in slowly, slowly. Hudson-Odoi, in good form, he can help carry the load for you until we get to that position. But ultimately, I also see the other angle is that they're not necessarily in direct competition as well, because I feel what Christian brings is he's a lot more direct. He makes better runs into the box, and you see him quite often finishing off close range chances because his instincts are different to that of Cowell's. So I could see a world in which both of them play at the same time. It's just which positions would you get them in? So again, dilemma is one way to look at it, but I look at it as a glass half full and thinking as long as Christian is feeling fit now and he's getting more minutes, and Hudson-Odoi, like Miz's point earlier, how does Tuchel continue to satisfy him and continue his good development and good form, knowing that the spanner in the works is also Timo Werner, who we know can play on the left-hand side, along with Mason. So it's, for me, I'm just glad that we're having these problems come up now as we enter the very congested fixture list.
Yeah, I think, too, the depth's going to really pay dividends for us going into this tough winter break. And welcome back to the other side of the coin, as my friend Miz likes to say. And I want to continue and can kind of compare this to the Kepa and Mendy situation. You know, I think Pulisic and Cal, from what I've seen, you know, are really good friends, actually. And they like spending time with one another. And if they train hard every day and they work hard, which it seems like they do, off each other, really could benefit them down the line. So I really like the point that you made right there, RJ. I want to turn this into the Leicester match, guys, because it's coming up on Saturday. I got some quick facts for you guys. This might be a little bit of a long spiel, but this will always give. I like to dive into some cool trivia that maybe you guys don't really know about. So I'll start with this. Leicester City are unbeaten in their last three home Premier League matches against Chelsea, last having a longer unbeaten run on home soil against the Blues from 1985, mind me, to 1995. So they've not lost to Chelsea in the last three matches at Kim Power Stadium, the place where Frank Lampard last lost his job in 2021. In all competitions, Leicester have won two matches against Chelsea, the match I just mentioned, but also the dreadful FA Cup final where Yuri Tiermans will hopefully not be playing, you know, on Saturday. For it will help Chelsea. In the last 10 years, only one team actually, guys, has beaten the Blues three times in a single calendar year. That was Manchester United back in 2019. They beat Chelsea twice in the league under Ole and once in the Carabao Cup when Marcus Rashford hit one of the best career kicks that you've seen recently. Leicester City have lost 14 of their last 16 Premier League games against the league leaders, I might say. Their last such victory coming in January 1998, but then very bad recently against the teams of Manchester City, Liverpool, and Chelsea. They haven't been able to keep clean sheets like the Fofana, Justin, and now Tielemans out. They've only kept one in their last 17 Premier League games, guys. So hopefully this is a day where attackers can get going. They shut out Wolves in the opening weekend, but not since they haven't had a clean sheet. We have been very good on the road. Won our last three Premier League away games by an aggregate score of 7-0, but Chelsea actually haven't won four in a row on the road without conceding since December of 2008, when one of Felipe Scolari was managing the club before I was supporting it. No side has scored more headed goals in the Premier League this season than Chelsea. So really going to exploit Leicester City on set pieces, because guess what? They've conceded the most headers this season. That is 4. From Lukaku, it's not really looking like he's going to be able to feature, but he has scored 5 goals in 8 Premier League matches against teams managed by Brendan Rodgers, 5 against his Liverpool, including the last goal scored against his Liverpool side in October 2015 for Everton. No player has netted more Premier League goals, guys, against teams managed by the Northern Irishmen, except for Harry Kane. Leicester City striker Jamie Vardy is just 2 goals away from equaling Ian Wright's Premier League record of 93 goals scored after turning 30. However, Vardy has only scored in 1 of his 9 Premier League games against sides at the top of the table. Somewhat of a theme, Leicester City haven't been great against sides in the top, and neither has one Jamie Vardy. So there's some quick facts that export into today. I think the one about Leicester only keeping 1 clean sheet in the last 17 games is someone to really exploit, especially with the injuries that we've mentioned. So guys, previewing that game a little bit before we wrap up, start with you, Miz, on this one. I was able to give some bold predictions before a game. But before that, how do you see this game really playing out? What players do you want to see on the pitch come Saturday? But also maybe give a little bit of a bold prediction. Maybe what can we see happen maybe on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm always a bit weary straight after an international break, because some of the players, the chemistry, the momentum gets broken. So you got to, you know, find all of that back again. I honestly cannot remember the last match after an international break where we looked amazing. I think the last one we played Brentford and we should have lost that game. And the one before that, it was Aston Villa. And I think we probably should have got maybe a draw. Like Aston Villa probably deserved something from that particular match. Hadn't it been for Kovacic and his madness in midfield and obviously Lukaku doing what he does up front, that would have been a very different story. So I'm weary. I always am. Straight after an international break, I'm very, very worried as to how the team's going to come out. The other thing is who's going to start, because all the injured players, they may have come back in training. I highly doubt they will start because they've not played football in a very long time. Timo Werner, I don't think will start, might come off the bench, probably won't even do that. Lukaku, possibly, maybe last 10 minutes of the game, could. We'll see what happens. Mason Mount, maybe some minutes in the second half. We'll see what happens. I don't know whether he will start. He hasn't played for a little while as well. And all the other players that played in the international break, like, you know, your Jorginhos have played all the matches for Italy. So how much rest has he really got? Maybe it doesn't matter. You're just going to be called up. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, he's well rested, so he'll probably get a game time, I think. Could possibly even be Kante. I would like to see Kante play this particular match against Leicester, because Leicester, they're a very decent side, and I like to see good players for us. Not to say Ruben Loftus-Cheek isn't a good player, stupendous player, but you know, you want to see your world-class players like Kante play, so we'll see what happens there. And yeah, just overall, I want our team to be serious, because we are top of the table. I want them to start thinking that there is something to lose. That, you know, it's not just another game, and it's not just, we are on top of the Premier League table, and this upcoming fixtures, as RJ said from the beginning, the 9 or 12, RJ, was it 12 until the end of December?
Yeah, I think it's 12 in total. So a couple of Champions Leagues, a Carabao Cup quarterfinal, and 9 Premier League games.
So 12 matches till the end of December. This, boys, is the real deal right here. If we can pick up as many wins as possible, and the ones that we think are going to be losses and turn them into draws, and the ones that are going to be draws and turn them into wins, and we can come out 1st of January with us being on top, then we are serious. We are seriously in line to go big time for this particular Premier League title. So players need to understand that we cannot have another one of those December period that we generally have for the past God knows how many seasons. This is the time where managers most likely get sacked. So, you know, we've seen that with Lampard last season. We've seen it even during Sarri's season. This was the time where it was one win, one loss, draw, win, loss. Like, it was just so inconsistent, and it ended up being a race for the top four again, you know, scrapping for the top four. I want us, all the players, to now really, you know, gather together and make sure that they can make something out of this particular period. And yeah, that's all I hope for, man. And in terms of Leicester, look, I don't think they've had too many players gone for international break, so they're going to be raring to go. But there is that factor of Brendan Rodgers. The Man United job could be up in the air. How much he's going to be a little bit distracted, how much of the players are a little bit distracted, knowing that, oh, what's our gaffer? Like, you know, what is the future for our gaffer? So this particular scenario, I like that sense that we could possibly catch them on a moment where they're not completely focused. And that kind of tells me if we are on the ball, we should hopefully get a victory. And that could possibly mean Brendan Rodgers makes the switch to Man United. And so watch this space.
And watch his reactions too. I mean, especially after the game, if he's clapping up the fans even after a loss more than usual, we'll see what happens comes the 28th and what manager's in the dugout for the Chelsea game. It'd be so like the Blues to have Rodgers in for that first game against United. That's for another day. I was talking a lot about this topic that you just mentioned, you know, the winter period and our record. I think Tweeds brought up a crazy statistic last weekend of how terrible, you know, our record is. And Daniel brought up the good point of, you know, January 2nd, we host Liverpool. And if we're still in a title race at that point, we will seriously be able to contend going forward. But it's about, you know, getting wins at Villa Park on Boxing Day, you know, go into Wolves. I know it's might not be the hardest team, but go into a place like Wolves, beating the team like Leeds at home, you know. And we've got a huge match against West Ham during the next couple of weeks, who are flying high in the Premier League table. I want to issue this over to you now, RJ. From a more tactical standpoint, you know, what players you're looking forward to maybe exploiting Leicester's weaknesses, especially in defense. Maybe talk a little bit more about attack and what solutions and maybe what key factors can play out on Saturday.
Well, as we've mentioned, Leicester have been uncharacteristically very vulnerable defensively. And a game that really stood out for me in recent times was just how lethargic and how slow they were to come out of the blocks against Arsenal. And I know Arsenal have been playing well, but that doesn't justify how lackluster they were. And they just continue to, despite playing well in patches, they're good for a mistake. They are a team that just can't seem to concentrate for the full length of each game and give you opportunities to hurt them. And it just seems to, if you go back and analyse some of Brendan Rodgers' post-match comments, that's a common theme, is that we just continue to drop our heads at crucial points and often concede chances as a result of that lack of concentration. So, and you highlighted correctly about their set piece vulnerability. That could be something important for us. So you've got the likes of, you know, our defenders being very strong in the air from corners. So I'm looking to the likes of Rudiger, Silva, if he plays, versus Christensen, whoever. That can be a point of difference for us. But as you know, and as you both know, for us, the key to our success so far, especially in the last month or so, has been the width, and particularly our wing backs. The real RJ, Reece James, Ben Chilwell, they've been in dominant form. And I think that's where it's going to be the difference maker for us, because although we know we need to keep their middle nice and quiet and obviously limit their ability to have a quick counterattack with the likes of Harvey Barnes and Vardy, if we can force the issue and pin them deep, and pinning them deep will be obviously as a result of both Chile and Reece really playing high up and stretching and pulling apart the Leicester defence, that's when it will create the likes of our more central attacking players to hopefully find some spaces in and around the box. But what I'm looking for is not only for the wing-backs to keep doing what they've been doing, but I want to see our midfielders in our forward position, our forward people, take a bit more responsibility And actually, I want to start seeing some more proper shots being taken, because for all of the dominance in possession, I do question our ability at times to conjure up clear-cut chances. So we can't continue to rely on Ben and Reece to do all of the heavy lifting. We really need our forward players to step up, and also some of our midfielders as well to chip in and add a bit of a goal threat as well. So it's a team sport. Of course, they all need to do their jobs. But again, the keys to me will be how much we stretch them and pin their defenders back, and what we capitalise on creating that space. So for me, those forward players really have to step up, Shane.
Yeah, and I can't even believe now we've gone the whole episode without mentioning probably two of our best players so far this season, Reece James and Ben Cho. I wanted to highlight some other parts of our team because I know James and Cho have been getting a lot of attention recently, but I mean, my lord, they've been probably two of the most informed players in all of Europe recently, definitely two of the best fullbacks in all of the world recently. And I think once again, Ben Cho, storyline to look forward to going back to the King Power for the first time in front of fans since his £50 million switched to Chelsea. And N'Golo Kanté will be back, hopefully probably starting against his former club. I was going to say for my goal prediction, Reece James and or Ben Chilwell once again get a goal contribution. But at this point, honestly, I'm not even going to categorize it as a goal prediction, because honestly, it happens week in and week out. I mentioned this from set pieces before. I'm going to go Rudiger with a header to score in this game for my goal prediction. I think he could really get in, and he's going to really be looking out for this game. And it's another 12:30 p.m. UK kickoff. They're always hard. We're going to be put on the bus on Saturday morning, not taking a flight to this game. Our trip westward to the King Power. So it should be a great match. Looking forward to it, especially as you point out, after the international break, the first 20 minutes are probably not going to be the most fluid, but after the halftime break, you know, that's really where we're going to cement this place, and hopefully we can get the first goal in this game. It's always the most important. Lance, real quick, thank you for once again for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate our chat today. We had a lot of fun. It's always great to talk to you guys. You know, I think it's crazy. Once again, we're talking about this before. You know, it's 1:37 a.m. my time right now, and what it's like 5:37 p.m. your time right now. So I think that's the great thing about the Chelsea community. 16 hours apart, but at the end of the day, we all have the love for the same club, and we all love to talk about it with you guys anytime. Hopefully, which I'm more frequent, especially because I'm going to be on holiday pretty soon from school, which I'm really looking forward to. And I know you guys are just going to keep up the great work. I'll start with you, Miz, for right now. Mm-hmm. Where can my audience find your YouTube channel, and what kind of content you got come up in the near future? Thanks once again for on the podcast, man. Had a lot of fun today.
Yeah, man. I thank you heaps for having both myself and RJ. And it's been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure, honestly, Shane, talking to you. In terms of content coming up, obviously you guys can find me on The Other Side of the Coin. If you just, you know, type the words The Other Side of the Coin on YouTube, you'll find my channel. And upcoming content, I've got two in my mind. Actually, I had quite a few ideas, but then I was like, some of them are just probably a lot of work. You know, in order to create those videos. So, and I'm not sure if I have all of that time. But for the upcoming ones, I can assure you I will have two parts to the preview of the Leicester game that's coming up. So as I said, in about 3.5 hours time, I want to drop that whole Leicester point of view. So with Brendan Rodgers and whatnot, pretty much what we kind of talked about here, but in a little bit more detail and adding some, you know, different sort of comments and quotes all over social media. And so that will be a lot to do with Leicester's perspective on this particular match, which I want to sort of showcase. So that'll be part one of the you know, Leicester versus Chelsea game. And then part two will be after Thomas Tuchel, possibly when I wake up in the morning, because the press conference is going to be about 1:30 a.m. Sydney time. So I won't be up for that. So once I wake up, watch the press conference, I'll probably do a short video, maybe max 10-15 minutes on the preview of, you know, how, you know, Chelsea will set up, line up, our injury status, and you know, basically their outlook of moving into this game. So those are the two things that are coming up. And then after that, obviously the watch along for Leicester Chelsea, please, you know, get in on that if you want to. Check us out if you want to sort of ride along with us with the reaction, watch the match, and also have us on the side. To see the reaction, get in on the act, comment, I like to interact myself. And Ishan will be in the watch along together. And it's a bit of a ritual now when the match day comes. So that'll be that. And then obviously after that will be reviews of the match. So yeah, that's me.
And also, I mean, if you guys have made it this far, which I really appreciate audience-wise, if you made it this far into the episode, right after you hit listen to this, make sure to go listen to Miz's previews because it's going to be at the time of the podcast release. I'll make sure to put those links in the description. But also, I want to highlight, once again, Miz, Matisse, and Eunice's all-time Chelsea draft, which came out about 24 hours ago. One of the great things I love about Miz's content, especially those all-you-can-eat Chelsea episodes, is you can really go back and watch them anytime you want to. Especially, I know I really value that for me because I don't have the time maybe to watch it live. But the great thing is they cover so many topics on that show specifically. And that was a really fun one to watch. Make sure to go check out that. Make sure to put Miz's YouTube link in the description. RJ, I'm going to hand over to you now. Thanks once again. It's great to be talking to you once again, man. You've done some really great work, especially blogging-wise. I really enjoyed your reads, but also on YouTube. And with your two Premier League fans also from Australia. So keep up the great work, man. You're doing a great job. And thanks for coming on the podcast once again. Where can my audience find your great work on YouTube?
Yeah, thanks again, Shane. And always a pleasure to link up with Miz as well as part of our Monday night show, Down Under Football Crew. So go check that out because my It's a Football Thing co-host, Scott, Arsenal fan, don't judge him, not a bad guy. We also like to link up with Miz on the Monday. But for me, Shane, and for your listeners, you can find us on YouTube. So type in the IFT, the letters of the IFT pod, and hopefully you'll find us. We film twice a week and we recap the week that was and preview on a Thursday night the week that will be in the Premier League, but also doing some Chelsea-only shows as well just to have a bit more of an analytical viewpoint because I'm a risk analyst by trade. And, yeah, writing some articles for Talk Chelsea and the Chelsea Social. So the one thing that's a bit exciting on my end is I'm pretty confident, not 100%, but pretty confident that I will be appearing on Chelsea TV for the Chelsea Leicester match. So that will be something I'm pretty stoked about. Awesome. So representing the Australian Blues, but yeah, I'll shoot a link out on Twitter and the like. So
good fingers job, crossed, RJ.
Boys. But yeah, happy days on my end. Let's get the 3 points.
Mm. Well, RJ, once again, thank you for coming on the podcast today. Big shout out to you guys. And I referenced that free kick from Marcus Rashford, really, even though it was dreadful. I know you guys put out something, a clip I saw, talking about your favorite free kicks from other clubs. I've been watching your guys' little clips, and I may not have time to watch the whole videos, but it's been great to see what you guys have put out there, especially social media-wise, because I think nowadays, too, people don't have so much time in their day, but if you put out those moments during the episodes on social media, you still get the traction, and you still get the listeners' inputs. I think you guys have been doing a great job on social media as well with Instagram because I think I really appreciate that. I've kind of been scaling back on Twitter. I actually deleted the app from my phone and my computer. I'm only on it really once a day. So Instagram's where I'm really on it a lot. And it's been nice to see you guys put out some great clips from your content. From my side of things, I'm actually taking the weekend off. So there won't be any Leicester recap, but I'm really excited to be welcoming on one Nima Rudzari back onto the podcast who actually runs Sempre Inter. .com. We're going to talk specifically about Juventus, of course, Italian football. The national team will be probably a big talking point as they fail to qualify for the World Cup automatically. We're going to talk a lot about Juventus. I know it's not a certain Juventus reporter, but he does a really great job from Serie A and Inter Milan, who are currently the league leaders in the Serie A. Actually, AC Milan are league leaders, but they're very up there right now, having a great season once again. So that'd be a lot of fun. Great interview back at him in August, and I'm looking forward to talking about the Juventus match because, like we said, it's a huge matchup coming for Chelsea right now going into the Champions League group stage. But once again, thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast. As always, you can follow the channel at Lad for Matthew Harden Podcast Instagram, and you can find me on Twitter. Hopefully, I'll be a little bit more active, especially during Thanksgiving and Christmas break or the next couple of weeks at Shane Holcomb 13. But once again, thank you so much, guys, for coming on the podcast. It's been a blast. Thank you, audience, if you made it this far. Really, really appreciate it. You guys giving your time out on the weekend to listen to this episode because it was a blast. But until next time, Chelsea fans, we're talking to Nima Rudzari on Sunday. That episode should be out Monday, the day before the Juventus match. We're looking for that interview, so stay tuned for that. Next time, Chelsea fans, let's hope we can go out west and get all 3 points against Leicester City. And might not know, maybe Brendan Rodgers has accepted his fate. He will be signing a contract mentioned tonight. after Chelsea defeat him. We'll be looking out for that storyline. This has been a blast. As always, Chelsea fans, stay safe out there. Enjoy the game on Saturday, and I'll speak to you soon. Up the Chelsea.